Good evening, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, and of course our guest this evening was to have been Mark Phillips, and we were going to talk about mind control in America. But unfortunately, Mark is not home, and we haven't been able to reach him, so it's going to be you and me. But we've called a very good friend of ours to just see if it may be possible that he would be able to come on with us. If not, why, it'll be an open line evening. So these certainly are really fascinating, fascinating times. I had the opportunity to do a program at 6 o'clock this evening in San Francisco at the largest Christian radio station in mid-coast in Northern California. That's KFAX, wonderful, wonderful listening audience there. And of course, it was really a very interesting program because the host obviously believes we should go in and do something as far as Saddam Hussein is concerned, making the point that Saddam Hussein is a very wicked man, which he is. And of course, Saddam Hussein may have weapons of mass destruction, which I'm sure he does. And the fact that, well, if we don't do something now, why, of course, we may have problems in the future. And that was, of course, where we began to part company. Because I pointed out that, you know, there is no precedent in at least modern history for justifying a preemptive strike on somebody who has not attacked you. In other words, certainly Christian countries or moral countries don't attack another country because at some time in the future they might possibly attack us. Certainly it's very, very questionable whether you could really justify this from a moral point of view. And then I simply pointed out, and I quoted from Richard K. Betts' article in the Foreign Affairs magazine, January, February of this year, and I pointed out that the people who control Foreign Affairs magazine, the Council on Foreign Relations, controls and dominates both of our political parties, and certainly they control most of the media in the United States, and so when you read something in Foreign Affairs, it's usually, well, it's worthwhile contemplating and considering. And Mr. Betts is a senior fellow and adjunct at Council on Foreign Relations. He has a think tank at Columbia University, so he's certainly no piker at all. And Mr. Betts made a very, very good point in an article entitled Suicide to Prevent Death. And that was that if we attack Saddam Hussein, would there be any reason why he should not retaliate and attack us? Now, he pointed out that Saddam Hussein is a wicked and evil person, and we think that at some time in the future he may have sufficient nuclear or chemical or biological attacks, and he might launch a limited attack on the United States. Why, he would know if he did that in the future, if he was to attack us directly, that we would retaliate and simply wipe Iraq off the face of the earth. So if he knows that and he would, we believe that he's wicked enough that sometime in the future he would attack us in retaliation and that knowing full well we would retaliate, why should we think that if we attack him now and we drive him to the wall and we go after his jugular and we're going to kill him, why would we think that he wouldn't attack us now if we think he would attack us at some time in the future? And what are the implications of an attack on the United States? What do you think a major attack on the United States right now would do to our economy? What do you think it would do to our freedom here? Now, we already lost a great deal of our freedom as a result of the 9/11 attack and the draconian laws that have been passed, including the USA Patriot Act, the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act, the Homeland Securities Act, which is basically a blueprint for a dictatorship in America. What makes you think that if we've allowed these things to be enacted after one attack, that if we had another major attack, that we would not surrender all the rest of our freedom? And so with this thought in mind, I would simply say that I think we're very, very foolish to go to war with Saddam Hussein because he's not the major enemy. The major enemy, of course, is Saudi Arabia. The Saudi Arabians have been funding Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and this whole Islamic terrorist movement for many years. In fact, if you go into the background of Saudi Arabia, they have a different type of Muslim religion than most Muslims do. I mean, certainly the original religion of Muhammad, as laid out in the Quran, is a very, very violent religion. But, you know, as you analyze what happened, you know, after the first 300 or 400 years, why Muslims didn't kill other Muslims. They simply went into countries and conquered them. And if there were Christians or Jews there, they were second-class citizens. They had to pay a special tax, but they weren't slaughtered. But in the early 1700s, a man named Wahhab lived in Arabia, and he wanted, of course, to get back to the original Islamic religion that Muhammad had. And so he set up and basically worked with Ibn Saud, who was the king, a tribal ruler there. And certainly Ibn Saud's used Wahhab to justify his rule from a religious point of view, and Wahhab used Ibn Saud to promote Wahhabism, what came to be known as Wahhabism. And the Wahhabis actually, of course, they were quite willing to go to into adjacent areas and kill Muslims. Because if you did not go along with their brand of the Muslim religion, they simply slaughtered you. And they are basically, there are five tenets of Mohammedanism, and you should know what they are. A, there's no God but Allah. B, why you bend your knees, you pray five times a day. C, you're charitable. D, you go a distance, you go to Mecca at least one time in your life. And E, why, of course, you fast. Certainly you don't eat during Ramadan. So you can remember the five tenets of, and we'll ask you later in the program if you remember those things. And then, of course, but the Wahhabis added a sixth tenet to the Muslim religion. And that sixth tenet is jihad. And jihad, of course, says that you're going to only way you can get into heaven. And then, of course, if you don't go to heaven, you're going to go to hell, and it's a terrible, terrible place. And Muslims live in constant fear of going to hell. The only way that you can be sure you're going to get to heaven is, of course, to die in jihad. And then there's all sorts of wonderful rewards and 77 virgins or 72 virgins. I don't suppose it matters whether they're 71 or 77. You know, it's going to be just an ideal utopian place. Of course, it doesn't exist, and this is a false religion. But the people who embrace the Wahhabi religion, of course, believe that. And the Saudis have been pushing the Wahhabi religion, not only in Saudi Arabia, but once they, of course, they got their great oil wealth, they began to push it all throughout the world. And this is the basis of the Islamic terrorist movement, this radical form of Islam. Now, if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, it's 464-8295. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you, because it's just going to be you and me, or just going to be me otherwise. So if you have any questions about what we're talking about or something you'd like to talk about, give us a call. Certainly our guest is not available, and I'd hoped we could even get John Leffler on, but he's not at home, so we're just going to sort of develop this idea. Well, anyway, so the Saudi Arabians began to fund this radical form of Islam, and of course, remember, in 1965, the Congress, under the cover of the Vietnam War, changed our immigration laws. Prior to that, we had maybe 50,000 Muslims living in America. Most of them were very, very peaceful Muslims. They just wanted to come here for opportunity. But by opening, of course, the gates of immigration, why, of course, there was a tremendous impetus for people to come in from the Muslim countries. And with them came many of the people who embraced Wahhabism. And then, of course, Saudi Arabia began sending their clerics in who began to proselytize, and they were sent into the prisons where they began to recruit among the black population people into this radical form of Islam. And of course, this is not simply a peaceful form of Islam. This is a radical form of Islam that believes in killing whites, killing anybody who is not a Wahhab and doesn't embrace their form of religion. They've actually built about half the mosques here in the United States. There are 1,500 mosques, and about half of them have been built with Saudi money. The people have been taken to Saudi Arabia and trained in this radical form of Islam. Now, of course, the Saudi princes depend upon the Wahhabi clerics to legitimize their ruthless and tyrannical rule. And, of course, the Wahhabi clerics depend upon the Saudi princes for their income and for protecting them and keeping them in power. So it's a symbiotic relationship between the Saudi kingdom and the Saudi clerics, who are pushing this religion of hatred. And it really is hatred. It's hatred of everybody who does not believe in Allah as they interpret him. And, of course, this is an effort to get back to the religion of Muhammad. Now, you have to then go back to 1979, and in 1979, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who had organized the Trilateral Commission for David Rockefeller, And, of course, I had just happened to pick a logo with three intertwining sixes in it. Just coincidence. This is the same Zygmunt Brzezinski who is described in the book The Aquarian Conspiracy by the author of this occult book. She said, her name was Marilyn Ferguson, she said, Zygmunt Brzezinski's philosophy is basically very, very similar to ours, and I believe it is. They want a world government, just like every occultist do. Well, anyway, Zygmunt Brzezinski in 1979 was the National Security Advisor to Jimmy Carter. And, of course, it was during the Carter administration that we toppled the Sandinista, that we toppled Somoza, and we brought the communists to power, the Sandinista in Nicaragua. And the Sandinista were hardline Marxist communists. And then we toppled the Shah of Iran, and we brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power. Now, why in the world would we do that? Well, we would do that very simply because we needed an enemy, because we were going to use this Islamic terrorist movement to foment the New World Order, the New World Religion. If you go back and remember the Shah of Iran, certainly he was a corrupt tyrant, but then we keep corrupt tyrants in power all over the world today. Is there anybody who doesn't think that Musharraf, who we're funding and keeping in power in Pakistan, is not a tyrant? The government we're keeping in power in Algeria, the military dictatorship we're keeping in power there, are not tyrannical? Does anybody really think that the government of Egypt is democratic, that they won't even allow any opposition there? They got 99% of the vote on every election, maybe 99.5. They know almost as well as Saddam Hussein, and yet we keep them in power. And people must really understand, of course, we're keeping tyrants in power all throughout the world. Nobody has ever questioned the fact that we back dictatorships. We call them good dictatorships because they're not communist, but in many instances, they actually are communist dictators. In fact, we have troop stations in Georgia today to keep Shevardnadze in power. We have troops stationed in a number of the Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan and I can't even pronounce most of those countries, but we have, of course, our troops stationed there to keep the dictators in power. So the American people must understand that certainly this is a technique that we use over and over again to finance our enemies and keep them under our control, or sometimes even to create the best enemies that money can buy, as we're doing with communist China today. And everybody's so concerned because the communist Chinese, of course, have the Panama Canal today, and the Chinese communists are expanding their military capacity. We're helping them do it. We're doing it intentionally. And anybody who honestly thinks that Bill Clinton gave the Chinese communists our technology to be able to MIRV their missiles and to, be able to actually get their missiles be very, very accurate, their intercontinental ballistic missiles, believes he gave that for a few $100,000 in campaign contributions, which George Bush will do nothing at all about. I mean, it's incredibly naive. This is how we, of course, constantly build up the enemies, the best enemies that money can buy. Well, I'm going to ask Dale if he will try once again to get John Loeffler on the line to see if we can get him possibly as a guest. And if we can't, why, we'll just continue. And let me simply suggest, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'd love to talk to you. And remember our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, out across the country and up in the great Northwest, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. So let's see who we have on the line right now. Who do we have on the line there?
Hello, Dr. Stan?
Yes, who's this?
My name is Rex.
Hi, Rex. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Yakima, Washington.
All right.
Washington,
well, it's good to have you with us. Do you have a question or comment?
Well, I have a comment. I just want to tell you, I haven't been with your show long. I've been introduced to it by a friend, and I just want you to know that there's a lot of people out here that I know that are following you and your newscast or your radio show, and I want you to know that you're right on target placing God as our number one leader, and that we should also be active after that. We should pray and be praying for God's help, but we also need to be active in our pursuit of the aggression by the the naysayers and the evildoers out there.
Amen to that. Well, thank you very much. It's good to know that you're listening. And, of course, the biggest thing that encourages me is to know that people are telling other people, because that's how we're going to build up a listening audience and hopefully get people educated and thinking that this is the big problem we face.
Very good.
God bless you. Thanks so much for calling, Rick.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Scott Bye-bye. Calling from Spokane. Hi, Scott. How are you doing?
Oh, good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Good. I was just curious, when in the Old Testament where there were preemptive strikes, like when they were taking out, you know, the Israelites were taking out the Canaanites, the Perizzites, to clear the land, do we not have another basis for that if Saddam is a threat to Israel?
But I think basically when the Israelites were doing it, they were doing it because God told them to, didn't they?
Right.
All right, fine. Did God tell us to go ahead and take out Saddam?
Well, if he knows everything, if Saddam Hussein really is planning an attack on Israel, he could be protecting them by using us. Possibly.
Or maybe, of course, what he's doing is using us to bring a terrible tragedy to Israel and to punish the children of Israel and the people of the United States. And I don't think that we are acting in, on the part of God. The administration sometimes talks about God, but all you need to do is look and see what they're doing. They're putting key homosexuals into key positions in our government. They're talking about, this idea that the government's going to give churches money. That's just an excuse to take over control of the churches and make them dependent upon government. So I really don't think that we have a very godly government at the present time. In fact, I think that there is evil permeating every aspect of our society. But certainly I think that God can certainly allow these things to happen. My fear is, of course, that there will be an attack on Israel, not to protect Israel, but that Saddam Hussein, forced to the wall, he's going to die anyway, going out in a blaze of glory, either launching a chemical or biological attack on Israel. We know there are 4,000 Hezbollah. These are Iranian troops in Lebanon. They're waiting for the word to be given. They have 10,000 rockets aimed at Israel. I think Israel is in for terrible, terrible times. And I'm also expecting retaliatory attacks on America. I hope and pray I'm wrong. But on the other hand, if you look at it from God's point of view, I don't know if you watch any of the television programs, but I guess it was Saturday night, they had the grannies on, and I wanted to watch something else, but we just watched the first program there, first or second one. It was the most repulsive, vulgar presentation, and I looked at that and I said, God is going to judge America, and he's not going to allow this to continue going on. So, God may bring terrible, terrible things on America. My personal opinion, and if I don't know if you've listened to me very often, Scott, but we created Saddam Hussein. We kept him in power, and we can go back to 1983, when Donald Rumsfeld was going over there playing cheek-to-cheek with Saddam Hussein. All during the 1980s, we gave massive amounts of money to Saddam Hussein. So he would, of course, be a counter to the wicked Ayatollah Khomeini in Iran, who we had brought to power when we toppled the Shah. And then, of course, because the Iranians were winning the war, why we gave Saddam Hussein chemical and biological biological warfare agents, the same ones we're so concerned that he has today. And then we funded him. And we, if you'd like, and you can call my 800 number and ask for the article out of the Washington Post that tells you that story. It was just a few weeks ago. We have books that will tell you that thing, a book written in the mid-1990s called Against All Enemies. And it points out that we gave him the chemical and biological warfare agents. We gave him a great deal of money. And then, of course, we have the Gulf War. Now, what was the Gulf War really all about? Well, Saddam Hussein had a disagreement with the people in Kuwait. So he called in the American ambassador. Her name was April Glaspie. And he said, what's going to happen if I take military action against Kuwait? And it's all there. The transcripts are there, and I'll be glad to send you the article. April Glaspie told Saddam Hussein, George Bush certainly wants closer relationships to Saddam, and furthermore, George Bush is not going to declare any sort of an economic war against you, and she assured Saddam there would be no problem at all if he went into Kuwait. In essence, that's what she told him. So Saddam is not very smart. he moved into Kuwait, and the next thing we see, why, of course, we're beginning to get the troops ready to attack him. Now, the real clever part of this was that the American government went to the Saudis and they said, look, Saddam Hussein has, you know, 175,000 troops and 1,000 tanks on your border, and he's about ready to attack you. Let us move our troops into Saudi Arabia. Now, there was no truth to it at all, because a woman in St. Petersburg, and we'll be glad to give you the article on this, actually a reporter for the St. Petersburg newspaper, who's been nominated for the Pulitzer Prize, got the Soviet satellites exactly at the same time, and the Soviet satellites didn't show any tanks and any troops massed on the Saudi border. But the Saudis believed our representative, and they opened up their country so we could move our troops into Saudi Arabia, move our troops into the Holy Land, which inflamed the whole Islamic radical movement. I mean, here the Crusaders are on the Holy Land, and this was Osama bin Laden's big complaint. Our troops were in Saudi land. So, and now, of course, we've got something, a constant festering sore, irritating Muslims who are the fanatic vet all throughout the world and in Saudi Arabia. So, but then, of course, you know, after the Gulf War, what do? We leave Saddam and stay in power. Why would we do that? And then, of course, oh, well, we didn't want to get into street fighting. And look, we were 60 miles from there. I mean, the country was totally demoralized. We could have taken Baghdad with relatively little loss of life, but we didn't do it. Now, there's a fascinating book, and I'd suggest it to you. We do actually carry it. It's called Against All Enemies, written by Robert Baer, who is a CIA station chief in northern Iraq. The book was cleared for publication by the CIA, and he points out he was there in 1995 in Kurdistan and operating there for the CIA. He was a station chief. But he pointed out that the Iraqis believe that the CIA betrayed the Iraqi military leaders in 1993 who wanted to overthrow Saddam, and we betrayed them, and they were arrested and tortured to death and killed. Then he points out that when 1995, when he was there, the Iraqis again wanted to overthrow Saddam Hussein, and we wouldn't let them, we wouldn't support them. So if indeed that is true, and we backed him in the 1980s, and we left him in power in 91, and we kept him in power in 93 and 95, why are we sending American boys over to die today? People have forgotten that when you start a war, you never know how it's going to end. It's like taking a wild card, you know, when you're playing cards. Do you really want to risk the future of America by going into a preemptive war because sometime in the future Saddam Hussein might try to attack us?
No, I agree. The United States will definitely is going to be judged for all our wickedness. I mean, it's getting worse and worse by the minute.
You're absolutely right. And behind, and what we really see is you and I talk about the military things, but God is judging the wickedness of this land and of Israel too. And so there are two entirely different worlds. One's a real geopolitical, and the other is a spiritual.
And what about the verse where it says, you know, God will bless those who bless Israel, and those will curse those who curse Israel, like, you know.
Well, I certainly support Israel's right to be there, and certainly I believe God is going to take action against these Arab countries that are trying to destroy Israel. And I'm very, very seriously concerned, because I've read the plan, and you can find it in the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report that came out of the Club of Rome meetings and the Earth Summit in 1992. That was the second Earth Summit in Rio. And they talk about how they have to get rid of the three monotheistic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and the Muslims. And we may very well help them to take out the Muslims, and then after that, why they may very well take out the Christians and Jews. Now, they're never going to completely succeed. God's church will remain, and the children of Israel will remain until they've served their purpose on earth. But in the meantime, I think we're heading into terrible times.
And do you think that God could be using the United States to punish the surrounding areas, you know, like Saddam Hussein, Iraq, Iran?
I think very well. But yep. My concern, and I believe that this is not going to be simply a war with Iraq. I hope I'm wrong, but I can see, you know, going after Syria and Iran as well. But you see, the whole idea of the leaders, our elite, really want a world empire that they control. And if you doubt that, do you have access to the Internet?
Yes.
All right. Go to newamericancentury.org and read all the material there. This is the Project for a New American Century. The members of this are people like Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, John Bolton, Undersecretary of State in charge of Middle Eastern Affairs, Peter Rodman, the number five man in the Defense Department, Dick Cheney's chief of staff, a fellow named Liddy, and right on down the line. Back in 1997, they planned this whole thing. They planned this war. They planned everything that's going on today. And you can read their Rebuilding America's Defenses report that came out a year before the terrorist attack. And they talk about how we will have our troops permanently stationed in the Middle East. And it doesn't matter about Saddam Hussein. That's what they said in 2000, in the Rebuilding America's Defense. It's newamericancentury.org. Read the material there, and then let me know what you think of it. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, God bless. And anything else you wanted to say?
Oh, let's see. If there was one more thing that I had. Eventually, there's going to be 10 kingdoms.
Yeah, I'm sure there are.
Revelation, do you think maybe if this does backfire on us that, you know, since we are probably one of the number one superpowers, that might even out the playing field for those kings to come on the scene?
I think so. I think that everything here somehow is going to play into God's plan. I think America's going to be terribly hurt in this, and I think that this would be part of God's plan, of course, to get the attention of the people in this country who don't really need God, at least they think they don't.
Right. Okay,
God bless you.
Appreciate your time,
Dr.
Stan. And God bless you, too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, let's go to Jerry calling from Los Angeles. Hi, Jerry. How are you doing?
Hi, Stan.
Hi, how are you doing?
Oh, good. I really don't understand your opposition to, taking action against Saddam Hussein. You know, you said he's an evil man, and he's a threat to us. So what are we supposed to do, just take it? You know?
Well, I don't think he is a threat to us. I think that this is exaggerated, and I'll be glad to tell you why I don't think he's a threat to us. I don't think Saddam Hussein is crazy enough to attack the United States unless we drive him to the wall. And if we drive him to the wall and we're going to kill him anyway, would he have any reason not to attack?
Well, I think he's potentially crazy enough to give, chemical weapons or perhaps a nuclear bomb if he has.
But he doesn't have nuclear weapons. Where did he get his chemical weapons?
From us.
That's right. He got his chemical weapons from us. Maybe we ought to be worried about why we gave it to him. Hey, you hang on. We'll be back with you in just a moment or two, okay?
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we have with us on the line right now Jerry calling from Los Angeles, and he feels that perhaps we ought to go ahead and attack Saddam Hussein because he might, of course, come against us. But after all, the Russians could come against us too, couldn't they? They've got, they've got literally, I think, about 7,000 nuclear warheads. Now, do you think we ought to attack Russia? Because they could certainly have the potential to attack us.
No, but
How about communist China? I mean, they've got intercontinental ballistic missiles. They've even talked about nuking Los Angeles. How about going to war with communist China?
Well, if they nuke Los Angeles, we certainly should.
But if they don't nuke, because the potential that they might Los Angeles, should we go to war with... You see, Jerry, we could go to war with the whole world.
Yeah, I understand that. But except the Middle East terrorists, That's not a hypothetical threat. That's a very real threat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. But who's financing the Middle East terrorists? Who's financing Al-Qaeda? Is Saddam Hussein? No, he's not financing Al-Qaeda. It's Saudi Arabia.
Well, I'm not sure about that.
You can show me any evidence of any large-scale financing of Al-Qaeda from Saudi from Iraq, and you're not going to find it. I would suggest the book Hatred's Kingdom, which we're carrying now, by Ambassador Dor Gold, the former Israeli ambassador to the United Nations. He documents, he has even the copies of many of the checks, of the financing of the Al-Qaeda movement and the Islamic terrorists by the Saudi Arabian government. And, of course, we have many sources of information on this. There's a book entitled Tea with Terrorists, written by Craig Wynn, who is actually over there talking to the terrorists. And everybody knows over there that Saudi Arabia is financing this whole thing. In fact, 15 of the 19 terrorists came from Saudi Arabia. Does that bother you? Osama bin Laden came from Saudi Arabia.
Again,
why are we going to war with Iraq? I mean, we should have gone to war with the people who financed this whole thing, which was Saudi Arabia rather than Afghanistan, so we could put in an oil pipeline rather than Iraq.
Let me get your view, Hester. Right. You say World War One, World War Two were phony setups by this. The secret, by whoever, this nefarious power.
Not whoever it is. It's basically...
Whoever it is, the Seeking of the Masons, well, you know.
Well, basically...
Let me ask a question. Okay. Let me finish the sentence.
Okay.
Okay, so is your position in 1939 that we shouldn't have attacked Hitler? We should have let Hitler, rape Europe and, you know, we just stick to defending American shores.
Well, first of all, let's take a look at Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler came to power in 1933, and of course he came to power because there was tremendous unrest in Germany at the time. There was tremendous inflation caused by the terms of the Versailles Treaty. That the only way that the Germans could possibly pay off the reparations would imposed upon them was to inflate their currency, and the whole system was collapsing. So in the years that followed, American corporations went over and began to build up the military of Adolf Hitler. And we actually have a copy of a letter that the Ambassador Dodd, the American ambassador to Germany, had written to Colonel House in 1936 saying, "Why are American corporations building the military equipment for Germany? We just got through with the war. Why are American corporations doing that when they can't get any money out of the country?" And what you must understand, Jerry, as you look at the Second World War, is American corporations built up Adolf Hitler's war machine, and they couldn't make a profit at it. And we did it because we were creating the best enemy money could buy. There's a wonderful book. It's called Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, written by Professor Sutton when he was basically at Hoover Institute, documenting the fact that American banks, Exxon, General Motors, Ford Motor Company, were involved in helping Adolf Hitler create his war machine. So they wanted a war. And you have to understand, wait a minute, let me finish.
Right.
They wanted a war, and we continued funding him right after the war started. We continued funding him during the war, and some of our banks, including Brown Brothers Harriman, where Prescott Bush, of course, was on the board of directors, were even keeping German money, that's Nazi money, during the war. After the war, the wicked Nazis, we brought the head of the Gestapo over here to the United States. His name is Heinrich Mueller. We carry the books about him based upon his diaries. We brought most of the Nazi scientists over here, including everything would point to the fact that Dr. Mengele, the angel of death, the most vicious of all the Nazi war criminals, because he, of course, killed so many children. We brought him over here. I've talked to four people personally who met him, and I talked to a psychiatrist earlier this week who deals with people with split personalities, and so many of these people had met Dr. Mengele in their early life. And so we helped the Nazis escape to South America, and you wonder why they were never picked up down there, because they were protected by the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
You have to understand that nothing is as it appears to be. That's the great tragedy of our time.
But, Dr. Stan, these companies that did that, they were all... they did this all independent of the American government.
No, they did not. They were these are the companies that dominate the American government. The Ford Motor Company, the General Motors Motor Company, Exxon. They basically, our government is an extension of the Rockefeller.
Yeah, and I
Let me finish. The extension of the Rockefeller family. The Rockefellers have dominated American politics. In fact, both political parties, between the Rockefellers, the Morgans, the Mellons, and two or three other countries, they've controlled our banking for many, many years. So the thing is that you can't say that this was independent of the American government. These people dominated our government. I've been through the files of the Council on Foreign Relations. Nobody else has. And back in 1938, I have their files here. They were already planning on the Second World War. It was all planned ahead of time. We created the best enemy money could buy, because only out of war could you change society.
I agree with a lot of that, but I don't agree that the American government was directly involved in like setting up this kind of conditions that led to Nazi Germany. And
what do you base that decision on, that opinion on?
Well, based on the fact that we live in a democracy, and we have elected representatives who reflect our values and our will, and one of the values is that we didn't want Hitler to go around taking over Europe and committing genocide. And I think it's immoral not to oppose people like Saddam Hussein and Adolf Hitler.
Now, how about Mugabe? Should we go to war in Rhodesia today?
Well, we
should
can't,
we go to
we
war with the very, should we go to war with all the dictators in Africa?
No, of course not. We have strategic interests, and we certainly have an interest against guarding ourselves against terrorism.
Well, wait a minute, but you have not yet verified the fact that Saddam Hussein had anything to do with the terrorist attack on America. I've already...
I never said that.
Talking about terrorism, and Saddam Hussein is not really financing terrorism. These people, 15 of the 19 terrorists came from Saudi Arabia. What does that suggest to you?
Oh, that Osama bin Laden and the people who were behind the 9/11 attack wanted to drive a wedge between America and Saudi Arabia.
I would say that maybe the Saudis were financing a lot of this, and they are the ones who are pushing so much of this Islamic terrorism throughout the world. Hey, we got another caller,
okay.
But thanks so very much, Jerry.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We've got Robert calling from Spokane. Hi, Robert. Let me put our telephone number out again. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Robert. How are you doing?
Yes, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Hey, have you heard that the real reason about this Iraqi war has to do with the American dollar versus the euro dollar?
Well, I have not heard that that is the reason. I mean, the reasons that are given now, Saddam Hussein may give weapons of mass destruction to Al-Qaeda, and Saddam Hussein is a wicked man, and Saddam Hussein, might at some time in the future have weapons and attack us, and Saddam Hussein tried to kill the president's father in 1992.
Right.
None of these are the real reasons.
Are being put out, but what I had heard is that back during the time when President Bush was being elected, that Iraq had actually gone off the... American dollar. They were apparently hooked up or hitched up, or you know how these different countries are allied with either the American dollar or the euro dollar, and that he had gone off that, and he's apparently hitched up, or Iraq is hitched up with the euro dollar, and that apparently the Saudis are now making noises that they're thinking about doing that too, and that this whole thing is to go in there and get Iraq back on to the American dollar and keep the Saudis from making the switch to the euro dollar?
Well, I haven't heard that, and I really don't think that is the reason for it. I don't think that they want the American people to know the real reason. But let me tell you what I believe, and I have no reason to believe I'm wrong, the real reason behind all of this. And do you have access to a computer?
Yeah.
All right. I want you to go up.
To
All right, go to
verify some of this information.
Okay, newamericancentury.org. newamericancentury.org. I read, of course, the a statement of principles of this little group that met in June of 1997. And here you find, and I mentioned earlier, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, a fellow named Liddy, Dick Cheney's chief of staff. Now, this is 1997. You follow Paul Wolfowitz, literally the hardcore of the current war cabinet of George Bush was all in this little group, along with Gary Bauer, Frank Gaffney, William J. Bennett, a number of key people, Midge Dector, Norman Potter Rhodes. 12 of the 25 people here came from the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, they came up with a plan for basically extending American influence throughout the entire world. They wanted an international order. That was their statement. We want an international order that America is going to lead. And then, of course, in the year 2000, they came up with a report called Rebuilding America's Defenses, where they talked about we're going to have our troops permanently stationed in the Middle East so we can dominate that area. It doesn't matter about whether Saddam Hussein is there or not. Doesn't really matter. And the whole theme is about American domination of the world. This is really what it's about. They want an empire. This is a small group of very wealthy and powerful men who feel America should dominate the entire world and everything should be for our own imperial interests. Now, the thing is, they can't tell the American people that, because who wants to send American boys to die over there, for American imperial interests? Most people just want to live their lives and be left alone. But there is an elite out there that really believes that America should dominate the New World Order, the New World Religion. Now, I personally think that their effort is going to fail. But I think it's going to fail with terrible consequences for America. And I really fear that there's going to be biological attacks on America. I believe our economy is going to collapse as a result of this. But we're going to blame this all on Saddam Hussein, and I don't think he's going to be responsible at all. Certainly our whole economy is really is rotten from the very basis. We have exported most of our jobs to other countries.
We don't have any economic infrastructure anymore. The only thing we have is our monetary system, American dollar, and if we lose that, we have nothing.
You're absolutely right, and I believe the American dollar is going to fall before this thing is over. And I think that it's sort of like opening a can of worms or getting the genie out of the bottle. Once the genie's out of the bottle, you're not going to get it back in again.
Well, I think that's why they're going over there, is to put it back in and get it back on the dollar.
No, you certainly have a right to that opinion. I believe they're going over there because there's a long-range plan. Go to newamerican.org. Read their plan. And after you've read it, will you give me a call back, Robert?
Sure will.
And it's newamericancentury.org. This is where they talk about how they're going to establish, in essence, their empire. America is going to dominate the world. And right now we have our troops in 140 different nations. We just sent our troops over, 3,000 troops over to the Philippines, but we've got troops all throughout the Middle East and every country over there, whether it's Uzbekistan or Turkmenistan or Georgia or Azerbaijan. What are American troops doing in all these places? And nobody ever asked that. And they don't understand that we have a master plan. It all has to do with the New World Order, the New World Religion. Because behind all of this, Robert, are the spiritual forces. And of course, as we talked earlier with our caller from Spokane, I think it was Robert who called from Spokane.
Oh, that's me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, well,
guy from Los Angeles.
All right, fine. Anyway, we certainly are cannot ignore the fact that we have a plan, our leaders have a plan, Lucifer has a plan, God has a plan. And we're going to see this whole thing acted out very soon. I believe God is going to bring terrible judgment on America. And would you say that we don't deserve it? Is there any reason why God should bless America
when the
church has abandoned him?
It said that he's amazed that we've lasted as long as we have or something like that.
Amen to that. Anything else you'd like to say?
No, that's about it.
Okay.
There's a good book called Germs that's out.
Yes, that's by Judith Miller, and
that's real interesting because that kind of shows us that we knew that he had biological and chemical weapons back in the Gulf War back in 19, 92 or whatever.
Yeah, but remember, we gave them to him. We gave him, and we gave him the money to develop all of these things. He could, never could have done these things without our help, aid, and scientific knowledge.
And that's the reason why they didn't go in. That's why they stopped 30 miles from Baghdad, because they knew he had those weapons back then, and he would use them if we went in. And now,
I think that's the most ridiculous argument in the world. You mean to tell me that he would use those weapons on his own people and kill all the people in Baghdad, including himself? That is simply the excuse to justify leaving Saddam Hussein in power. I want you to think of it logically. I mean, you've got this terrible disease. Let's imagine you've got, anthrax, or you've got one of these other diseases. You're going to release that, on your own people to kill the Americans?
I'm saying this is why they didn't go in.
Well, that's what they tell us.
Military, this is what they thought and why they didn't go in, because they were afraid he was going to use those weapons.
I think that's the official party line. I don't believe it for 1 minute, but you're absolutely right. That's what it says in the book. But you have to realize that Judith Miller is a writer for the New York Times, and the New York Times is the mouthpiece of the Eastern establishment.
I understand that.
Okay.
Hey, God bless you.
You
too. You're doing a good job. And you've got a lot of listeners up here in the Northwest, like the other caller said.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Joseph in Capitola. Hi, Joseph. How are you doing?
Hey, great. About the euro being the reason why we might be going to war, I don't think so. And the reason why I would say that is, if we think about what the euro is, it's fiat currency. And
well, what's ours?
Yeah, fiat currency. And exactly the same people that print ours probably print theirs. So we get the idea that there's two competing currencies, two competing unions, which won't be two, which will be one, and soon we'll have one currency. And that's the idea, I think. And if you look on your dollar bill, anyone in the audience, if you take out a U.S. note and look at the Treasury seal, you'll find a square. On the scales. I think there's a square in scales, like the square of the Mason Square. It has stars in it. You'll see it there. I don't know. It's pretty clear to see what's happening. And if Saddam was really a threat, Israel, which has a huge and very powerful military, would annihilate him tomorrow. If they thought for a day, for a minute, that Israel could be harmed by him, he would have been gone yesterday. And that's pretty much all I wanted to say.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with anything you said at all. In fact, if we would leave Israel alone, she would have taken care of Saddam a long time ago. In fact, she did what needed to be done in the early 80s when she just sent her planes in and knocked out his plant where he was building nuclear weapons.
Right. He took out Iran. Didn't they blow up a nuclear reactor that Iran was building?
No, they built up the nuclear reactor that Iraq was building.
Okay.
But, Iran, if we're looking for, a country over there that has a big military, it would be Iran. And Iran has, at least according to the book, The High Cost of Peace by Joseph Badansky, who's the director of the Congressional Task Force on the Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare, Iran has chemical and biological and nuclear weapons. They have a number of nuclear weapons. So they've got an army probably four times the size of the Iraqi army at its highest, and probably the Iraqi army is probably only a shell of what it was before, probably a third or a quarter of what it was previously. Iran has one of the largest armies in the world, and so we're going to war with Iraq.
The Art of War, people read The Art of War. You can read about how our military, so mighty and so powerful, may have certain weaknesses that people may be watching and waiting for us to get ourselves into a position where we'll be stung badly, And
there is a notice, and you can actually go up on the web, and it's just type in Osama bin Laden February 11th. He gave a speech on February 11th. It was either February 11th or 12th. I think it was February 11th. And in that, he talked about how wonderful this was that we were going to go to war. Because this gives him a wonderful opportunity to recruit people throughout the world, because we're demonstrating exactly what he's been saying. America wants your land. America wants your oil. America wants to dominate you. Join me, because they are the great Satan.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he talks about, what happens when we begin losing large numbers of men. And he talks about, how you want to use camouflage, how you want to use deception, how you want to drag the American troops into street fighting so they'll lose the maximum number of men.
Right. A large force like America is, gets to be slow, and smaller forces can be agile and faster, and we can run into trouble thinking we have, just because we're powerful doesn't mean we can always win. I mean, in Afghanistan, there's 130,000 Russians or something that got marched out with their hands in the air.
I think that the one of the best examples is what happened back in 1899, and that was the Boer War. And the British were the mightiest army in the world at that time. I mean, Britain literally ruled the world. I mean, they had the places over in China that they controlled, Hong Kong and other bases, and they controlled India, and they controlled Pakistan. And, India, the old saying was the sun never sat on the British Empire. They had, most of Africa. They controlled the Sudan. They controlled Egypt. They had a whole line of colonies along the east coast of Africa. And there was a bunch of crazy Boers, African farmers there, without any military training at all, who didn't want to go along with the British. They didn't want to subject themselves and have the British come in and rule them and control them. And so the Boer War came. Well, in 1899, the whole thing was manipulated by Lord Milner, who was a British High Commissioner, and he was actually the agent of Cecil Rhodes. He was doing Cecil Rhodes' bidding. Cecil Rhodes wanted that war. It was a manipulated war. It was created as to be the first stepping stone to create what Cecil Rhodes dreamed of, and that was uniting the world under British control, basically the New World Order we talk about. Well, the British public said, here are these straggly Boers, a few thousand of them, and the mighty British Army. Why, this will be a tea time war. Why, our troops will be home by Christmas. And, of course, 3 years later, 100,000 British casualties later, the troops did come home.
It did, dead, yes, and a shot for a shot. When war comes down to one man fighting one man, it doesn't matter if you have a tank anymore. It matters if you can shoot your rifle. And I guess Saddam has already issued rifles to his people, which we did, right? The free people in America are issued weapons to defend ourselves. And if he's really done that, we are definitely walking into a trap. And that's all I guess I wanted to say.
God bless. Thanks very much. Let's go to Terry calling from Spokane. Hi, Terry. How are you doing?
Fine, Stan. How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Say, I picked up a book today at an old bookstore, and it's called The Wisdom of Thomas Jefferson. It was written in 1943. And I just wanted to ask you, what did you think of Thomas Jefferson?
I think he was a brilliant man. I think that I think that when he was very young, he was coming from a Christian world perspective. I think you have to realize he went through various stages in his life. And I think that when he was, at the time of the writing of the American Constitution, he was over in France. And I think that he changed his positions and he embraced some of the Illuminist concepts that they had over there. And then, of course, I think as he got older, after his presidency, he changed again. And, of course, for a long time, he and John Adams were very much at odds. And, of course, I think that later on, as they were both getting to be older, why they came closer together. Now, I don't think he was ever an evangelical Christian. I think he said he was a Christian. I think he believed in the teachings of Jesus, but not the divinity of Jesus Christ. But he was certainly one of the wisest men, and he understood one thing about government, and that is you could never trust it. And I have a book called The Master Thoughts of Thomas Jefferson that I treasure. I keep it right here beside me, and I suspect the book that you picked up is very, very similar to that. I think he was a brilliant individual. I think we are indebted to him. I think that in his Declaration of Independence, what he wrote as a very young man, he basically encapsulated the concepts of liberty laid out by John Locke. In fact, that whole document is based upon the beliefs of Christian writers, whether it be Rutherford or Blackstone or Locke. And I think we're indebted to him for a document which is the very foundation of this country, and that is the Declaration of Independence.
Could I share with you his life motto that I found in this book? It's very short.
Go ahead.
It says, "Rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God."
Yeah, well, very, very wise. And, he wanted people to be free. But of course, the one place I think that he may have missed it is with the realization that you can't be free unless you are totally giving yourself over to God. Only people who have given themselves to God are free. The freedom is not the ability to do what you want to do. It's the ability to do what you should do according to God's rules. And if God isn't in charge, you're going to have chaos. That's what it's all about. But I treasure the writings of Thomas Jefferson. I remember those words that are inscribed on the Jefferson Memorial. God, who gave his life, gave his liberty. But can the liberty of a nation be secure when it is forgotten the conviction that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just and his justice cannot sleep forever.
I wonder when his justice is going to awake on America.
Well, every time I think of that, I shudder because I believe God is just. And when I see these MTV programs and Michael Jackson, and I see how the corruption in the sitcoms, you know, and I realize that the impact it's having on the morality of our nation, God is not going to take it too much longer.
No, I don't think so either, Stan. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Terry.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Okay,
bye.
That was Terry from Spokane. And, well, I hope you enjoyed the evening. Actually, I always enjoy the open time and forgive me sometimes, I guess I get a little emotional when we get into our discussions, but I think that they're healthy. And I think it's so important that we realize that there are geopolitical forces at work and there are spiritual forces at work. And we cannot look at things entirely from the political point of view, from the logical point of view. I think we have to, of course, understand that in the end, God is going to determine what's going to happen. So right now, we're just going to say goodnight to our listeners up there in the Great Northwest and ask you to pray for America and pray for revival. Pray for our boys going to battle and the people of Israel and the Arabs as well. And please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. but in the battle for survival of Western civilization. It's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. Now, we always welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Pastor Victor Michaels. And, of course, Pastor Michaels has a church down in the, I believe, Santa Maria area. And he'd called me the other day. And we, of course, chatted. And we felt that we just felt very similar in many respects. And really both share a concern for what's happening to the church in America, which seems to have changed its message so much and being getting increasingly away from the point where a Christian should be totally dedicated to God, has to turn his life over to God. In fact, Pastor Michael's church is, what is it, the Crucified Life Church?
Yes.
All right, fine. Anyway, why don't you just sort of tell us your feelings about what's happening in Christendom today?
Well, my sense of what is going on in Christendom today is that I believe through many years of experience and frustration trying to find God myself many years ago, that I would have been a Christian much early on, at least 20 years earlier than I was, than I became a Christian in 1975, if it hadn't been for Christians. And that's not to say anything wrong with Christians, in the sense that you used the word reality a little bit earlier. But if, in truth, people had been Christians and had revealed the living God to me, I would have been able to deal with that. I think so many themselves have been become Christians in name only, or if there's such a thing as partial Christianity. But this is to say that so many people in themselves have become so lackadaisical in their Christianity that, in my opinion, and my experience in the presence of God, he reflects the living God today and hardly reflects what he intended for Christendom and the Christian church.
All right, fine. Well, of course, now my understanding is that you you have a church down there in the Santa Maria area?
Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, is this a non-denominational church? Is it tied to a major denomination?
It is part of Friends International University in Merced.
Okay, fine.
Dr. Michelson up there, Edwin Michelson, and we've been with them over 17, 18 years now, I believe. Perhaps more. I think I stopped counting at 17. Maybe it's 20 now.
Well, no, I think that in Christendom today, the Christian message, I think a lot of it is sort of designed to make people feel good about themselves. And, of course, I'll never forget when
exactly.
I went to a little Baptist church out in Scotts Valley. Every Sunday, I got out of that church, and I felt just a little guilty. I wasn't as good as I should be. But in some ways, I think we have to be constantly reminded of that, you know, because we are all sinners saved by grace. Certainly we're not, you know, good within ourselves. No one is good, really, except our Lord. So, you know, I think it's an important message that needs to be gotten out. And, of course, we don't necessarily want to be popular. If Christianity was working today, we'd see evidence of it. We'd see the fruit in the society. We wouldn't see the immorality in the church. We wouldn't see the divorce in the church.
Exactly.
We wouldn't see Christians just standing by as our country is being destroyed from within. They'd be taking a stand for righteousness, and certainly the silence is almost deafening.
Right, me. Right on. Absolutely.
Well, what do you think should be done?
Well, I think we're doing it. I think it's you might say in the military, foxhole by foxhole. We are reinstituting soul by soul and day by day and moment by moment the basic teachings of Christianity, which include dying to self, not living for self.
Well, I think that, and certainly it's so important. And of course, you have to manifest this to others. And sometimes it's an awesome responsibility being on the radio, because I'm a human being, and sometimes we get into a heated discussion, and of course I want to win that discussion. But sometimes you're better off just to sit back and be quiet and let the other people
Amen.
Talk for a while, and then of course try to bring out the facts. But what an awesome responsibility to be on the air as a Christian, and you as a minister.
Incredible.
And of course people look at you and say, if that's what Christianity is, I don't want it. I would hate to have them say that about me, and I would hate to think that anything I said would turn people away from what I really, my real purpose,
yes.
and that's to bring them to a personal relationship
Absolutely,
with the Lord.
Doctor. And they have, they've been very rejecting of the teachings that I have found were very rare, but had been popular, at least with a small remnant, I like to use that word, of the Christian community with A.W. Tozer's work, Pursuit of God. I don't know if you're familiar with A.W. Tozer.
I know of him, but I am not a biblical scholar, so I have to talk to people who've done all that research, and then I learn from them. But please tell us a little bit about Tozer.
Well, Tozer was considered a modern-day prophet. He taught what I had just said to you, that instead of exalting the self or watering down Christianity by sending 90-something percent of our children to public school to be de-Christianized and debriefed from faith in God, they have been taught to be having faith in themselves. That they are the end-all, be-all, and the alpha-omega of their own lives, and that they just need to have Christ consciousness or self-awareness or whatever you wish to call it. But Tozer was one who said, excuse me, we need to die to ourselves, live for Christ, and make him the alpha and omega whom he says he is. And Tozer's ideas were not well accepted in the church, because there are so many hireling pastors in the church today who unfortunately promote themselves, and it's not entirely their fault. They promote themselves by appealing to the sheep, and then instead of being pastors, they become hirelings. Instead of shepherds, they become the sheep, and the sheep become the shepherd, hiring and firing and dictating to pastors what they could, should, and ought to say, and what they may and may not reflect to the community. And Tozer stuck to his guns, stuck to Christ, stuck to Paul's teachings, and promoted the idea of dying to self and living for God. And in short, when I began to teach those ideas to a group of people who were very much hurting people. Our entire church is a restoration church from every sin you can think of, and all are involved in counseling and restoration and accountability. And people would say, well, this is very culty. Tozer didn't think that, the remnant of true Christianity, that kind of teaching of dying to self meant that someone should take hold of them and run people through the gauntlet, which is not at all what we do or what he taught. It was simply bringing them to the living God and holding them accountable for the practicing of the principles of the teaching, and not simply teaching the teaching and telling people to interpret themselves so that they may stay in power. And I have been told, in short, that to teach these ideas openly, I would have a very small church. To teach these things, as I have done in many churches in the country, is to say that we might offend people by using the word sin. To teach that they need to come to accountability before the Lord and before one another, to minister to one another and to confess their sins one to another, that they may be healed. And James, So this is not a popular teaching. They said, well, in this case, you may find yourself without a church. I said, excuse me, I wasn't hired, and I won't be fired. And this is the attitude in which I say I serve the Lord. I serve the living God. No one's going to hire or fire me besides God. And I'm led by the Holy Spirit to teach what I teach. And those who want to be afraid of their flock and tell me to do likewise if I want to have any kind of a church are absolutely correct in the sense of secularizing the church, and incorrect in terms of teaching the living Bible.
Well, I think, of course, that the one of the basic tenets of the church until recent several decades was this concept of sin. We were all sinners. But that isn't a very popular message today. In fact, Robert Fuller said he would never tell anybody they were a sinner because they wouldn't feel good about themselves. And, of course, his whole theme, and it's a very successful theme.
Yes.
In fact, he wrote a book called Be Happy Attitudes.
Yes, of
take off on the Be Attitudes, Be Happy Attitudes. And this, of course, is what people want.
A happy church.
Right. And they want to be. But the trouble is that we got people so happy, and then, of course, we see the fruit of that happiness. And there's not, they shouldn't be happy when you're a Christian.
It's not the joy of the Holy Spirit. Right. It's the happiness of worldly happiness, right?
And that is the problem we face. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience and you agree or disagree, why, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Our guest this evening, Pastor Victor Michaels. And
thank you.
We're certainly talking here right about what's going on in the church today. And, of course, the change in attitude and, of course, some of the things that are happening. Certainly many of the churches have got into this concept of, well, success is a big church. Success is, well, you have to, in a free enterprise system, you've got to market. So how can we market Christianity and make it more palatable?
Make it user-friendly.
Right. What's your response to that theme? After all, isn't that the mark of success? I mean, look at Walmart. If they weren't user-friendly, they would not be expanding all across the country.
You know, we're not in business to sell price. Price to people. We're in the business of introducing people to Christ. And he stands ready already to save them and to heal them and to deal with their sins in a godly way, in a kindly way, but not in a mediocre self-serving manner. People are born in a very self-serving body and mind and spirit, and God died for the purposes of resurrecting them in a new heart, new spirit, and with the Holy Spirit and the mind of Christ. Which, by the way, most pastors I talk to are not even aware of. But this entire attitude of watering down the church is somebody's idea in the hallowed halls of university land, the idea of transforming the church through getting a hold of its children and brainwashing them into secularism.
Well, wouldn't it make it much better if the church was more like society? I mean, we certainly can't expect to make society like the church, can we? Or can we?
Frankly, I think that's exactly what Christ kings do. I believe he ran into a secular group of people who call themselves godly men, the Pharisees. And I think he tried to unsecularize them, as far as I'm concerned. They were practicing as holy men with traditions whose hearts were unchanged.
I think that is the big problem that we face so much today. And, you know, they've tried to make the music more applicable to what's going on without realizing the impact of music on the hearts of men. I mean, you go back and you read Plato and Aristotle, they understood that music had changed the very structure of society. And what I see, you know, not only the music, but the response to people as you see them dancing today. And I loved to dance. And when I was young, we used to have, you know, ballroom dancing. It was wonderful. It was beautiful. And I look at this dancing today, and, you know, and I think that, you know, they would have been probably blessed in Sodom and Gomorrah if they'd seen the type of dancing we have today.
Absolutely. And aren't we marketing the church as if we were marketing a corporation which was involved to simply make money?
Well, of course, you know, there are actually some of the people have come from the business world to sell these techniques to the church.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
They are successful. But, of course, is it success in the matters of the world, or is it success as far as God is concerned? And I would like to suggest it's success as far as worldly things are concerned. But I think as far as God, in fact, as far as eternity, all we need to do is look at society today, and I think society is a mirror of the church. I mean, certainly the church is the most, could be the most dominant force in society, and as I look in the mirror, I don't like what I see.
It's becoming powerless. But are we here, Doctor, to build churches, to build bigger and better churches for the egos of those who, and I do say egos of those who match them? Are we here to build the kingdom of God and make ready for his return?
Well, I think, of course, you know the answer to that.
Of course. Rhetorical question.
Of course, it's a rhetorical question, and I agree with you totally. You know, I see nothing wrong with a big church, but it's what's taught in the church, and it's how it's approached, and it's the message. And tragically, your message and my message is not very popular. You know, this is not what people want to hear. They don't want to hear that America is in real trouble. They don't want to hear that God is going to punish this country and bring it to its knees. They don't want to hear that they may very well lose everything they have materially, and the only thing that will sustain them is their faith. That's not a popular message.
No, it's not. And the idea of submission itself scares everyone to death today. The rugged individualism of America, where, you know, born in a rebellion, is still with us. And the idea that anyone might submit to a power greater than themselves, other than Alcoholics Anonymous, perhaps, or you know, those kinds of organizations, is apparent to people today, when we have a society of children who run the society, run their homes, run the schools, run the parents, until all are afraid of them. I've been an educator since 1960. I've always been associated with the public schools and teaching, counseling, administration, supervision, school social work, bilingual teaching. You name it, I've been there, and I've been involved with it until the, say, 1994. And I've been in schools and involved with schools since I was a child in 1940, perhaps. So I have some idea what has happened through the history of that time, and was appalled by the direction the public schools went from probably the 60s on, where they began to produce a totally different kind of child than we were raised to be in the 40s and 50s and earlier.
Well, it's very interesting. I was talking just yesterday to a professor at the University of Texas Business School there in Austin, and of course, he was just saying, first of all, his wife had been a teacher in the public schools, and so he was aware of what was going on, but what shocked him the most is the students in his class and how they have changed, you know, over the last, you know, decade or more.
Incredible.
To the point where there's no discipline, there's no no respect, you know, and these kids are, you know, we're setting them up for a life of failure. If you don't have respect for your seniors and your elders, you're not going to have any respect for yourself. If you don't have a discipline, you're not going to have any personal discipline. And you just think that life is a bowl of cherries and going to have a good time. Of course, you're setting yourself up for a terrible tragedy when you have to get out and make a living in this competitive society.
Sure. I ask the children in my classrooms and also my church what, in fact, they live for. And they say they live for getting their own freedom and to become independent, get their own money, their own car, and whatever. And I said, what do you consider, from being taught in our schools, what do you consider to be freedom? And they said, it's a free country, doing what I want to do. I said, that's what you consider freedom. And I said, just interesting, since many of you are Christians, especially in our church, or you claim to be, that is not a biblical definition of freedom.
How do you
freedom is freedom in Christ is freedom, or freedom to do what you're supposed to do rather than what you want to do is what brings true freedom to the soul of man.
That
and
is,
they absolutely objected to that.
But they don't understand that, you know, license without responsibility leads to moral anarchy.
They think that license is a car.
Well, they have to understand, as you said, freedom is the ability to do what you should do according to God's law. And God has these laws there, not because he's a killjoy, but because he knows that only when people act responsibly will they be happy. And if you want to be sexually promiscuous, there are going to be consequences for it, psychologically and physically, and all the diseases that are out there. I mean, you know, the responsible marriage, the marriage that follows God's plan, is going to be a happy marriage. And, you know, but the marriage that violates God's plan, or young people living together because they want to live together, those relationships ordinarily end up with so much heartbreak. And God put the laws there because he wanted us to be happy. Mm-hmm. But if we don't follow his laws, and the young people don't understand, they have to submit themselves to yep. God to have a full and happy life. And that's the hardest thing for a young person to understand. I wish I'd known when I was 15 years old what I... No, today I wish I'd been in your church at that time. I'm sure I would have gotten a good understanding of what it is to live under God's rule.
Well, the people in my church are absolutely shocked because almost all of them came from other churches. Some as old as 80-something, 82 years old, a lady came recently and she said, pretty much the same thing. She said, you know, I've been to many churches in my 82 years. And she says, I have never heard the kind of teaching that you do. And I said, well, I'm not a scholar, I am a teacher. And there's a difference between a scholar and a teacher. A scholar may interpret the letter of the word quite correctly, but a teacher teaches you what the principles are behind the word, how to practice the principles, holds you accountable for the principles being practiced, and helps you follow up until you are successful in Christ to achieve some degree of progress until Christ himself comes, if necessary. And she said to me, this one lady, as I say, is 82 years old. I think she just celebrated her 83rd birthday. And she said, I have never heard this kind of teaching in all the churches. I said, what have you heard? What have you heard in all of these churches that you've been to? And, of course, I know. She said, well, they have a message. They teach what the word says. But I've never heard anyone go into a depth as to how it's going to apply to me. And she said, so many people in the church, in your church, feel like you are talking exactly into their individual life situation, just as I do. You're making it so practical that it's uncomfortable. And I said, then you are being challenged? And she said, absolutely. I said, is that a sin? She said, no, I welcome it. I am, first time in my life, I am growing. And that's tragic.
Well,
for me to hear this.
Well, at least she is growing at this, and that I think is a credit. You know, what about do you have a school? Is your church large enough to have a school?
We're very small, but we have a school, and we believe in that every child should be taken out of the public schools and out of government education and put into private Christian school. And we have a small one, although mighty, using the Alpha Omega program. And our children, get this, you'll love this, we have tested all of our children and even many of our adults who were honor students. They come in at least 3 grades lower in our evaluation than the public schools say they are, at least 3 years and 3 levels, some of them 6 levels. Honor students, 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade. The honor students coming in at the 3rd grade level in our evaluation of the same material that was given 100 years ago.
Well, let me just, as long as we're talking about schools, let me just comment that there is going to be an open house at the VHM Christian School, kindergarten and new student open house on Tuesday, March 11th at 7 to 8 p.m. Now, this is at 427 Capitola Road, Extension Santa Cruz, California, but that's between Soquel Avenue and Capitola Road. That's the VHM Christian School, and they have a kindergarten visitation, and they have openings for students, and I really think it's a great school. I know my son went there many years ago, but they do have some openings right now, so if you are a parent out there, let me suggest that you go down Tuesday evening, March 11th, for the visitation, and at least to see what they have. It's full day from kindergarten to 8th grade. And if you'd like more information, call 475-4672. That's 475-4762. 475-4762. If you'd like to know more about this excellent Christian school we have in Santa Cruz, and We've certainly seen the end product. We have a little girl that was raised here at our home. Her mother works for us, and so we've had her here ever since she was born. And how exciting it is to see her at six, you know, coming in, and she learns a new Bible verse every day. And, of course, putting God's Word into the mind of a child is the most wonderful thing you can. And, of course, you know, just to hear her being, she doesn't even understand the significance of the verses, but she's learning them. And those verses will be with her all of her life. And so let me just suggest, if you're out there in the listening audience and there's any way that you can possibly arrange to get your children out of the government schools and into a Christian school, this is an excellent one.
Could I caution on something on that, may I?
Yes, go ahead.
Please, no one take offense, because I'm all for children learning verses in school. But many of the people whom I've worked with, which are in the hundreds, I have 200,000 hours in counseling, and not to mention teaching and preaching, but so many of our kids have learned to memorize verses, and I have gone to them over the years and said, now, can you tell me what this means to your life? And almost unequivocally, they say, I don't know what you mean. I don't know. And I'm sure there are many who can. I'm just giving the downside of this.
Of course,
it's not all bleak, but I am saying there is a problem here.
Well, I think that they should be taught, of course, what they...
Of course.
At 6 years old, why, she's a little young for that, but I think that all of this is so important. How do you begin to apply these verses?
Exactly.
And what does it mean to you? And I think that's such a well-taken point, because, of course, a rote memory is good, but on the other hand, it has to have an application to the life of the child.
It's nice to have a tool in your toolbox, but if you don't know what to do with it, except to please your parents because you can spit it back out, that's not education when children answer questions. It's when they develop the questions to be answered.
Amen to that. Well,
amen.
I think that's very well put.
And one other thing may I add?
Right, go ahead.
In our school, what's very interesting about it, which is something the Lord put on my heart many years ago, but you know how many children are in special education. Many of our children in our small school come from special education backgrounds. A number of them were children who were asked to leave their school, were put out of school, expelled from school, carried to the principal's office by four people trying to get one child out of the classroom into an office. We have children who are so rebellious that they are not wanted by any other school, and they are progressing in this individualized program where they can see their progress every day and mark it.
Well, you know, I think that a lot of the children really are rebellious because they're not learning, because they feel that nobody cares. Some of it would be an effort for attention. But the other thing is there has to be an element of discipline. They have to know that, you know, discipline combined with the love and caring, they have to know somebody really cares for them as well.
Well, I think this is the point, I think, of the smaller Christian school, because there's at least... for every two students or three students, we have one adult. And part of the problem is not the public school's fault at all. It's simply that these children need individualized attention that goes beyond even what special education seems to afford them. They need an incredible amount of love and attention and guidance, and they need discipline.
And
they need loving discipline.
Are these people from your church that work in the school?
Absolutely. Volunteered at practically nothing to help these children, and it's working.
Well, I think it's a great and wonderful thing that you're doing, and of course, I think every church should be a school. I really do.
Amen.
I think that there is just no justification for abandoning our children to the government schools.
Absolutely.
And then wondering why they turn out so badly.
Well, thank you for concurring.
So we're, of course, talking with Pastor Victor Michaels, and if you're out there in the listening audience, maybe you disagree. Maybe you think that our public schools are doing a great job. I would certainly love to hear from you. Our telephone number, 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California, or out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, let's get on to some other things here. We're going to have to take a break in just a minute. But how do you look upon the events that are transpiring in the world today? And I think that this is something I think that we should be very, very concerned about. I did a program earlier today on the largest Christian station in Northern California, KFAX. And it was very obvious that my attitude towards what was going on, our coming war, was quite different from that of the host. He was very gracious and at least allowed me to get my opinions out. And so when we get back, and we're going to have to take a break here in just a moment, but we'll ask you, of course, what your thoughts are, how we should handle the difficult situation that faces our country, that I think is really dividing the Christian community. And many Christians, of course, are solidly behind the administration, and I think many of them are not. And I think, of course, all we can do is ask people to think things through carefully, consider the implications, and when we get all done, why, we hope we can join together on other issues. But I fear that we're in for some very, very difficult times in the coming months. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind our listening audience that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will decide that you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day on radio, and certainly 5 hours on the Internet, 3 hours, soon to be 4 hours on satellite, and 2 hours on shortwave. And of course, we're trying to get some of our programs syndicated so we can actually increase the listening audience. And you notice we have some new music, and we seem to be changing the breaks. And this is all getting to the point where we're going to be able to do this on a regular basis. And then we'll be up on a satellite, and hoping many of you will talk to your local radio stations and see if they'd be willing to pull us down and take some of the advertising time. And so there'll be more breaks. I always enjoy our programs when we don't have a lot of breaks, but unfortunately, the reality of radio is if people are going to, stations are going to pull you down, you have to offer them a certain amount of advertising time. And so since this is a non-commercial station, we do not advertise on it, but we can do take the programming and divide it up so that other people in the breaks that we create by the music, why they can insert their products. So under any circumstances, this is where we're going today. But so if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, the January newsletter is Why We're Going to War. The February newsletter is going to go into the background of the Project for a New American Century, which is a small group of very powerful men. In fact, they initially met in 1997 to plan creating a world empire. And, of course, in the year 2000, they put out a report which basically talked about American troops permanently stationed in the Middle East. Now, how do you do that? Well, you're going to have to take some country out there to permanently station our troops there. And I think that Iraq is the basic nominee. The organization Project for a New American Century, you can read about it at www.newamericancentury up on the web. Read what they have to say. I think that you'll be shocked, especially when you see who the people are who signed this statement of principle back in 1997. And then, of course, you'll understand why we are going to war, in my estimation, with Iraq, having nothing to do with the reasons we're told, but having to do with a different agenda. And that is American domination of the world, the American empire. I prefer a republic to an empire. They prefer an empire to a republic. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and again, that website, if you'd like to check it out to find out if we're telling you the truth, it's newamericancentury.org, and we're getting this material together, and that will be the subject of our February newsletter, who these people are, what their dream and goal is. And of course, my fear, having known what happened to the Roman Empire, what happened to the Persian Empire, what happened to the Greek Empire, what happened to the British Empire, that the same fate may await America as we move from a sovereign nation to empire. Because, of course, whenever you try to take away other people's freedom and control them, many foolish people, or many people, I shouldn't say they're foolish, I think they would feel exactly as you and I would, you would feel deprived, you'd feel better, and of course you'd strike back as the Irish have consistently, the people of the English, ever since the Irish wanted to tell the English how to live their lives. Well, right now our guest today is Pastor Victor Michaels, and I, of course, thought maybe we'd change the subject a little bit here and get into current events. What is your take on what's going on, and what should we be doing, and what should the Christian's response be to war? Should Christians support war? Should Christians blindly support what the government says? Or how should we address the current situation, which I believe is going to come about within relatively few weeks?
I was wondering if you would first preempt me in this area and just mention a little bit further, Doctor, what you were saying about the empire of America, what that, in your opinion, has to do with Iraq, because I think you're talking New World Order, and I just wonder if your listeners, our listeners at this point, are aware of the context and that you're coming from.
Well, of course, there's always been a plan, it is as old as time itself, to create a world government, and Nimrod tried this, shortly after the flood, 100, 150 years after the flood. In fact, he wanted to build a temple, building that would be so high that if God ever tried to destroy the world again with a flood, that they'd be able to get up in the top floors of this, and God couldn't destroy them. And they had this crazy idea, but of course it was a symbol of the power of Nimrod, and of course God did not approve of this and caused people to speak different languages. And, the most amazing thing is how all these different languages, came about almost spontaneously, and yet there's order in all of them and grammatical form. And I believe, of course, just as everything else, whether it's mathematics, music, astronomy, God has a hand in all of these things, the laws of physics, the laws of chemistry, the periodic table. Everything is organized according to our Maker, and I believe He created the languages left them as they are. Well, anyway, of course, there's repeatedly down through the centuries, whether it was the Babylonian Empire, the Persian Empire, certainly even at the time of Alexander wanted to conquer the world. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, came Rome. But even Rome at its greatest time, there was still a Persian Empire at the time, there was still a Chinese Empire. Mm-hmm. Nobody has ever come close to controlling the whole world until today. And, of course, there is a group of people who believe in this concept of a one-world government.
Absolutely.
If you read what I read, and I read a great deal of the public material that actually comes from people who belong to Luciferian organizations,
mm-hmm.
the people who actually worship Lucifer, who look mm-hmm. for the time when he will rule the world, and they want the one-world order as well, and they're working very hard mm-hmm. in that direction, and they're telling you that it's coming very, very soon. In fact, the most recent publication I got within the last 3 or 4 weeks from Benjamin Krem. And Benjamin Krem is mm-hmm. A gentleman who represents the Lord Maitreya, who, does he exist? I don't know if he exists or not. Some people say they've seen him. I've actually talked to people who said they've seen him. But he is supposedly a mystical individual who will be, for the Christian, the Christ, for the Jew, the Messiah, for the Muslim, the Imam Mahdi, for the Hindu, Maitreya, their God. He will be the God of the whole world that will unite all the religions of the world together into a common religion, going along, with, of course, with this new world order, a one-world order, a one-world religion. So these people have worked through many organizations, and whether we call them the Council on Foreign Relations or the Bilderbergers or the Trilateral Commission or the Skull and Bone Society or the Club of Rome or the Masons or the Rosicrucians, they are all working for exactly the same goal, a new world order and a new world religion. Well, the group I was speaking of course, comes out of the Council on Foreign Relations, which originally had its origin in the occult.
Right.
And these are the groups that created what we refer to as the New American Century Group, or the Project for a New American Century. And they signed a statement of principle in June 3rd of 1997, of which they basically called for an international order under our direction and for our benefit and our advancement. In other words, talking about America really dominating this international order. And that, I think, is what it's really all about. The report that they put out in the year 2000, September 2000, just a year before the attack on the World Trade Center, is called Rebuilding America's Defenses. And if you read that, it talks about really of the, we're going to have troops all throughout the world, and they liken them to the cavalry on the old frontier. Now, the cavalry, of course, was the forward military line of America's offense as we spread to the West. And it talks about how we are to have troops stationed throughout the world like the cavalry on the old frontier. And it talks about how we are to dominate the Middle East, and, of course, how we are going to have troops there. It says it doesn't matter whether Saddam was there or not. His regime is really unimportant, maybe another regime, but we will have troops. Now, this is, of course, September of the year 2000. So I believe, of course, we have to have an excuse to station troops there.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Saddam Hussein, being a nasty guy, is a very, very convenient individual to take on.
Yeah.
We could take on anybody we wanted to, but mm-hmm. Saddam Hussein is a good person, because it's very easy to of course, raise the ire, the anger of the American people towards him, especially after the terrorist attack. The terrorist attack changed the perception of the American people. Before that, nobody wanted to go to war. After that, what it was just like after Pearl Harbor, nobody wanted to go to war. Before Pearl Harbor, everybody was willing to go, anxious to go to war after Pearl Harbor. In fact, in this report, Rebuilding, they talked about the transformation of our military, and they said this is going to take a time unless, of course, there was a catastrophic and catalytic event like another Pearl Harbor. And that was just 12 months before the catastrophic and catalytic event on September 11th. So I believe that they knew exactly what was coming down the line. We have other reports from the CFR, the National Commission for Security in the 21st Century, that basically came out in September of 1999. There were 14 people on that committee. It was authorized by Secretary of Defense. 13 of the 14 came from the Council on Foreign Relations. And in that report, they talked about the coming terrorist attacks on America. We would have terrorist attacks using weapons of mass destruction on American cities, and Americans would die on our streets. And gee, isn't it amazing? The FBI had no idea the attack was coming. Even though they knew an attack was coming, they had no idea it was going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody believes that, they're incredibly naive. But the tragedy is, of course, that the average American it really is not allowed to hear all sides of the issue. The average American, so many of them, like Jerry, who listens to us down in Los Angeles, honestly believes we've got to do something. He believes that because he's been told over and over and over and over again by the media. And unfortunately, it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough, the majority of people will believe. And this is the great tragedy, is we've divided the country. I think a majority of the people are quite willing to go along with this war because they've never stopped to consider the implications. There's only one thing that's worse than a war, and that's losing a war. Could we lose this war? We could. If there is an attack on America that destroys our economy, that destroys our financial system, and that justifies the imposition of dictatorial controls and new laws on this on the people of this country, in that event, whether Saddam Hussein is defeated or not, we lose the war. Because in the process of fighting a war, we lose our freedom. Then, of course, well, it will be one of the great tragedies of all time, and the dream that once was America will no longer exist.
Mm. May I comment?
You're certainly male. I'll be quiet, and you go ahead.
No, I appreciate the background. I really appreciate it. I have one question I'd like to interpose here in the meantime before I respond, but because it gives me a perspective with which to comment when you say where you are with the whole matter. It saves a great deal of time. But also, could you comment just briefly, I'm being the interviewer now, but could you comment briefly to the listeners on where you see the Muslim faith fitting in to this new world order, or do you? Because I do not.
Oh, definitely. Basically, there is the Muslim faith, and then there is the Islamic faith, and
exactly.
I separate the two. The Muslim faith, of course, was the faith that had developed from about 300 years after Muhammad, where, of course, you know, it was a structured society, you know, and you were supposed to pray, but some Muslims didn't pray. They were not fanatic at all. It's sort of like a lot of the Christians in the United States. They say they're Christians, and they may go to church, they may not go to church, they may go to a church that really doesn't stand up for much of anything. And then there is, of course, the Islamic faith, and the Islamic faith, of course, is the faith of Muhammad, and it was really rejuvenated in the mid-1700s by a man named Wahhabi, or Wahhab, and of course is the basis of Wahhabism. And of course, they have not only the five tenets of the Muslim religion, which is there is no God but Allah, you will pray five times a day, you will certainly be charitable, you will take a trip to Mecca one time in your lifetime, and you will fast during Ramadan. They added a sixth, and that is jihad. And of course, jihad is you will kill the infidels, and you will kill other Muslims if they don't agree with your form of the Muslim religion. And these people are fanatic. And of course, within the Muslim religion, there is a great fear of hell. And unlike when you are a Christian, you know, you have eternal salvation. Once you really have given yourself to God, you don't have to worry about eternity. I mean, you're going to go to heaven, you know, and you've been forgiven for your sins if you are truly saved. But the Mohammedan never has that guarantee. And there's only one way he can be sure he's going to get to heaven, and that is to die killing the infidels, die in battle for Allah.
What percentage are the Islamic compared to the Wahhabs, compared to the original Muhammad faith?
Well, originally there were very, very few.
Originally.
You know, since we created the Islam, the war, you know, the Afghan war, why the number of people who've embraced the Wahhabi faith or radical Islam has grown significantly. I don't know how many there are today, but I would suggest that, you know, if you poll the people throughout the world today, probably between 50 and 75% of people look upon Osama bin Laden as a hero. Now, whether that represent that many people are truly in the Islamic faith, I don't know. I hope not. But let me tell you what another thing I see, and then I'll be quiet. I want to hear what you have. I believe that there's an organized effort to destroy the three monotheistic religions.
Yes,
and I think one of the best ways to do this would be get the Christians to kill off the Muslims.
Yeah, that's right.
And then, of course, they can turn around and of course, get the Christians to kill the Jews or the Jews to kill the Christians. And then, of course, they can get them all killed and destroyed. Now, they're never going to succeed in this because nobody's going to destroy Judaism, or nobody's going to destroy Christianity, but they can sure make our lives miserable in the meantime. And I believe this is part of a much larger plan, a spiritual plan, which energizes these wicked people who are pulling the strings behind the scenes. Okay. Then, of course, God has a plan. And, of course, so you've got all of these agendas. And whether the people are in Russia, they want to rule the New World Order. The people in our country want to rule the New World Order.
Right.
The people in China want to rule the New World Order. Everybody is vying for power.
Okay,
now I'm going to be quiet, and I want
to just for a little comment. I can see we're getting to the point that I wanted to get to. Thank you. And that is that something has to be done in order to water down the religions from a governmental secular aspect in order for the three to work together and to declare that they are all one under the Antichrist, right, in the New World Order.
Right.
The economic, political, and religious order has to be established. This being the religious order, as it stands, if we're correct and the Mahabs are any great proportion, all even 25%, as far as I'm concerned, that is equal to any 75% otherwise, and they would constitute a real threat to a New World Order of any kind, in my opinion. Christendom, true Christendom does too, but it's being watered down so rapidly that it may not be a threat at all by the time the Antichrist sets on the scene. But one faith really is a threat to them would be the Mohammedans, or the Islamic, as you call it, the Islamic faith. So we're talking on the same page. Would you tend to agree with that before I answer ultimately? You would agree with that?
Right.
Okay, then my ultimate statement is, how does this all work together with my opinion in the world arena, is simply that we will have a new world order. They will not be in the way when the time comes. Neither will the Christians nor the Jews or anyone else. whether by force or seduction, their faith will somehow, either they will be eliminated, those who are the real faithful in any of these faiths, whether it's Jehovah God they are faithful to, or Allah, or something else, but they will be watered down, these faiths, to a point, or controlled in some manner, or under some fearful tactic to bring them into this new world order. What do I feel within that context on the way there, so to speak, that what is going to happen in the meantime would be, in reference to Saddam, he is objectionable, a rascal, he's a killer, he's ruthless, he needs to be eliminated. Whether this is the time in the war to do it, I don't know, but I think somehow or other he has to be and will be eliminated, such as will anyone who might be a threat to the New World Order, to the overall plan. And do I want to see him eliminated anyway? Yes, whether it brings the New World Order closer or not. He's still a major threat, in my opinion, needs to be removed or controlled. Since they don't think they can control him, I suppose they'll remove him. But in any case, as you said, I think this is going to lead us ever closer one way or another to this new world order over all mankind. And he is simply, he's not just irrelevant, but he is temporarily or momentarily in the way and is a good pretext for bringing the elites, whoever you want to call them, the elite, the Illuminati, whoever, into their power. And then they will scrap at the top for that power, and ultimately the Antichrist will step in. Sort of abbreviated version here. I'd probably skip some important steps.
No, I think it's very good, and I would have nothing to disagree with you at all. I think everybody is being used in this thing. This is the difficulty. And, you know, I don't have a solution to problems. I know what's wrong, but, of course, all we can do is try to make people understand that behind all these things that are going on, as someone once said, behind all that foes have plotted, behind all that saints have planned, behind the schemes of men and demons is a higher hidden hand, and that's really what it's all about.
There, exactly.
There are basically the hand of Satan, the hand of God. The highest one, of course, is the hand of God, but he's, of course, allowing Satan, I believe, a full reign at this time. When, of course, the Lord intervenes, it's going to be a frightening thing for everyone in the world.
Absolutely.
But, of course, I think he will look after those who have given their lives to him, and this is the only thing that is going to see any of us through this.
I agree with that, and I see him, as I say, as in the way of their plan. He's in the way of George Bush's personal plan, President Bush, because of the threat that was given to his father by this man. And he's a threat to the stability of the Middle East. He's a threat to the Jews. But ultimately, there is an overall plan, and however you pattern it, he's still more than an upstart. He's a real problem, and he's in the way, and it just happens to fit the what do you want to call it, the imperial plan of the New World Order, the imperialistic plan, I guess you would say, to take over. And many are well dedicated to the idea of peace under Cecil Rhodes' ideas, seeing him as a hero for peace. And there are many people, I think, in this persuasion, as I was once in my early years, in my 20s, hoping that some kind of world government would bring peace. Well, under the kind of rule that we're talking about, satanic peace is no peace at all. And peace out of chaos and creating chaos in order to bring world peace is not, to my way of thinking, God's biblical plan.
And I think this is one of the most incredible things for people to realize, is these wicked people decided that the only way that they were going to be able to get this world government where we would have then no more wars and peace was to wage a series of wars.
Yeah.
And, of course, they felt that the best way to change the world was through war, and then these wars would eventually lead to the world government, and then we would have this peace that they dream of. Well, I think between man's plan and time and God's plan and eternity is an infinite quality of difference, and I think that there are going to be a really exciting times that lie ahead.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I think that the time is coming, and I don't know whether it's be this war, maybe this is an introduction to another war, but I think that the world has changed. It has changed on September 11th. It will never be the same again.
Don't you see it as kind of a Machiavellian approach, if you are familiar with the term, or almost Alexandrian, if you will? If I just could take hold of the whole world, everything will be just fine. And like Mount Everest, why did I climb it? Just because it's there.
Well, because
that attitude.
Caesar Rhodes really had this dream, and he knew he would never live to see it come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, you know, 100 years after I die, this will come to pass. Now, he died in 1902, just 101 years ago.
Isn't that
something? And, you can see this whole thing coming down the line. You see the Rhodes Scholars. You see the people from the Council on Foreign Relations. He created two groups. One was the Rhodes Scholarship. The other was the secret society, which is manifest today as the Council on Foreign Relations.
Right.
And, of course, I'm sure the average CFR member has no idea what that he belongs to an organization that came out of a secret society, and the inner core of that organization knows exactly what they're doing. The outer core is just like the Masons. They're simply the useful idiots that think that they're having some impact and they're rubbing shoulders with all these important people. They don't understand they're just window dressing, for the power structure that works behind the scenes.
Absolutely. And isn't it true that the Masons, once a very secret Freemasonry type of society into the occult, moved into the guilds and the working man class in order to hide discreetly until the upper degrees its own intentions?
Absolutely.
The world order?
Sure, absolutely. In fact, I think that it was Manly P. Hall who described this best when he said, Masonry is a fraternity within a fraternity, and it's the inner fraternity that of course is the real enemy. The outer fraternity simply takes men away from God. The inner fraternity takes their souls.
Is it not a religious order as such?
Oh, certainly it is, right.
A spiritual order, at least.
Right. And, of course, they worship the great architect of the universe.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, the trouble is that an awful lot of Masons think that is the God of the Bible. They really never sat down and thought about the implications of what they're doing.
When I was a Rosicrucian, I thought so.
Were you into the Rosicrucian order?
At 19 years old.
Oh, really?
I joined, but then it said, do you believe in God? And I said, yes. And they used a capital G. I thought they were talking about the same one.
I know. Well, but these people are so clever, and the trouble is you get into this, and you begin looking for that source of power, within, whether it's Rosicrucians, the Theosophy, or the New Age, or the Masons, and you keep searching, and, they tell you you're going to find it. Well, you get in so deep, sometimes you can't get out, and you suddenly realize that the source of power is not the God of Heaven, but Lucifer himself.
Well, both require your soul,
right.
Whether it's Satan or Jehovah. The problem is the Satanists know this very well. The Christian doesn't.
I think that is a very, very good point. So how do we get the Christian to understand that? Because the church is not telling them, is not preparing them for the true battle that lies ahead. And my fear is that when things get bad, an awful lot of Christians are going to just fold.
I seem to be able to show people that how their sins fit into Satan's order. And how in following Satan's order or the dictates of their own carnality, they seem to have not fared well. And I said, that's very interesting. Your brothers and sisters around you who have submitted to God seem to be faring quite well. Thank you very much. And as they notice that, they can't figure out why they are divided within themselves, why they are the mind going one direction, the heart going another direction, the feelings going another direction, the spirit going another direction, why they are non-integrated, people of a lack of integrity. They are because they are completely divided within themselves. They are raised in carnality, and they take that carnality to be their own identity, their pure and perfect identity. And it has been my business and my pleasure in the prophetic gifts that God has given me to show them that who they are is not who they have been.
I think that's well put. Do you have a website or anything you'd like to get out? We're just about out of time.
Oh, I'm sorry. I do have email.
Why don't you go ahead and
telephone.
Get that out? Go ahead and put those numbers out if you'd like. And
surely. My home phone is 805-937-3109. My church number is 805-614-9292. And I believe we have at least fax and email somewhere within, I can't remember the email, I'm sorry, but we have fax at 805-614-0612. And if anyone would like to write me, I would appreciate your call first, and I will give you an address. and I thank you for allowing me to voice my opinions. I hope they are as closely related to the Lord's own points of view as I could possibly make them, and I hope he is glorified in what I have to say today.
Well, I think he is, and God bless you. Thank you so much for being with us. Our guest has been the pastor, Victor Michaels. It's been an interesting evening. Good night. May the Lord be with him.
God bless you, too.
Bye-bye. And, of course, this is Dr. Stan. Please pray for America. Pray for the boys going into battle. Pray for, certainly, the Israelis and for the Arabs over there. The civilians, they're simply caught in this whole thing. And pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and protection.
Some people fired up there.
Well, that was an interesting event. And, you know, good people.
Oh, yeah.
Most of those people I never talked to before. They were all in college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, six. If I take notes on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, on that.